Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode features George Sadler, CEO and co-founder at California-based Platinum. This episode was recorded over the phone on August 11th, 2021. Originally launched back in 2003 as a father and son house brand during California's 215 days, Platinum has since grown into a multi-product offering MSO currently available in Michigan, California, Oklahoma, as well as the Arizona markets. Joined by George Sadler, co-founder and CEO over at Platinum. George, again, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you. Absolutely glad to be on.
Awesome. Well, I got to ask, man, since you're a legacy 215 brand, there's not a lot of players who have been in the, you know, the California industry that long that are still operating now in the 64 market. Since you've been in it that long, like, what was the largest transitional point for you as an operator?
Now, if I'm understanding this correctly, the transition that some people have chosen to make and some have not, which, you know, is personal to each business, I guess, or however they want to look at it. What's the most difficult side?
Yeah. Like kind of when you were making, you know, this transition from being a house brand with your son to a large scale business, like what was the one point in operating your business that you were like, you know, holy shit, this is kind of scaling rapidly. People are really loving the product. And you really realized that this was a business that wasn't just going to stick around, but that was going to scale.
Well, I think the myth behind all this is that anything was rapid. I mean, I don't know. It depends on how you look at it. You know, we've been 13 years, going on 14 years, you know, through the legacy market and then into the licensed market and now to the scale that we are. Man, I wish it felt like it was rapid, but there was never like a really a time that we were like, wow, this thing is it's just exploded. I think it's more of that we kind of cultivated this through that timeline. And it looks like it because we never really put ourselves out there as the big player in the game. And even to this day, it's hard to think that we are. And if we, you know, as we are, it's crazy that the numbers are what they are. And yet there's still these much bigger players than us. But I would say that the timeline for this was pretty lengthy, and there were times that we were like, wow, something's really happening here, but we've never had time to really take a look at it until recently in our position with RWB to go, okay, wow, this is really, we're a much bigger scale than we thought.
And when you will... Taking it a little further back, because, you know, you just mentioned, you know, Red, White, and Bloom in your acquisition point. But when you, like, let's take it back to when you first started, right? So the legacy 215 market during the medical days here in California, for people that are outside of California that don't know what we're talking about when we say 215, it's in reference to Proposition 215. But when you were operating during the 215 days, you know, it was definitely a much different landscape than it is today. You know, nowadays, basically everybody's a CPG company, you know, extremely high end marketing, extremely high end packaging. But when you were first starting out and you were first deciding, you know, hey, we want to do a step above and beyond what's currently on the marketplace. Like, when was that point where you were like, hey, I can't just put out, you know, a vape cartridge like everybody else? I mean, it may even be before you launched the brand. But at what point were you like, I can't do this like everybody else at the current point? Because I think during the 215 days, there was only like what, Kiva and maybe one or two other brands that had really, you know, nice packaging. Everybody else was kind of just saran wrap for edibles and, you know, basically dram bottles for flower.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And, you know, Cody and I, we came from cultivating into the store where we owned four stores, and cultivation. We were not manufacturing in the beginning. That's 2011 to about 2015. And at that time, yes, everything was, I mean, edibles were just in Ziploc bags, lunch bags, and for the most part, and cellophane, and cartridges came out, and open vape was the first cartridge to come out. And you know, once again, it was great for what it was, but it was, I mean, wouldn't even think about that these days. And so when we were selling so much of that through our stores, that's when we kind of realized that, you know, maybe that was the direction that we were going to go. And so, like you were asking, is when did we, you know, or how did we decide to become a brand? And yeah, we started that in the very beginning before we ever launched. As you know, Cody and I spent a lot of time talking about what this was going to be like and look like, and we took all of the negatives throughout that part and that timeline of the industry for cartridges and oil. We literally took all these negatives and made those turn positives on our kind of storyboard of what we were doing. And then the industry in a whole was in a dark place. Everything was dark. The 215 market was, you know, it was flourishing, but it was always a look over your shoulder. You didn't want to have certain things on packaging. You didn't want anything attached to yourself. You didn't want, you know, nothing consistent because you were afraid to be a brand. And we decided at that time, because all of our stores were named the same, we didn't go under the typical market of having these pop-up stores that had, you know, just a weird name and away you go. We kept everything uniform, and we made that decision and took that chance. And when Platinum Vape was, it was actually created, the name was created on the plane to China. You could only get carts and packaging in China at that time. And so Cody and I jumped on a plane and we flew to Shenzhen or we flew into China and mainland. And then we went over to Shenzhen and we spent about a week and a half with a factory where they were making our product. But Platinum Vape, we did like a name search and just kind of went from there and spawned it into what we wanted to have was an affordable product, you know, like a platinum experience. And that's how we came up with Platinum Vape. But we right off the bat knew, and the same thing with when we were cultivating, we knew we wanted to have something that was consistent not only in the product itself, but consistent to the shelf of where it was going to be and always, you know, moving towards a brand. At that time, there were only a few, and you're correct. Kiva came out with their packaging and with their marketing. That was probably they were the trendsetter on like, okay, let's move forward to branding a cannabis product at a time that was really unstable for doing something like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I just remember it was beautiful, this cardboard packaging, and they stamped their edibles. And I remember I was managing a dispensary at the time and seeing, you know, a couple of Auntie Dolores bars next to it. You know, you'd see the tinfoil wrapped, you know, hubby bars. And then they had the actual, this beautiful CPG product right next to it that I was like, you know, this is a game changer. This is where the industry is going. But, right. You know, when you were talking about your son, Cody, and your co-founder, you know, there's not a lot of father-son brands in the cannabis industry. When you were first deciding, you know, hey, I want to do this thing with my son, I got to ask a kind of a two-part question. And the first part is kind of, you know, when did you him finding out that you smoked, or, you know, you finding out that he smoked, you know, kind of what was the story behind that? And when did you guys finally decide that you guys wanted to do a product brand together?
Well, I mean, going back to that story, the reality is that nobody found out anybody smoked. what happened was, is I was winding down my father's electrical business at that time in late 2010 and or kind of mid 2010. and Cody was in college, and actually was in a business class where one of the kids had done a mock business on cultivation, marijuana cultivation. So Cody came into my office at that time and said, "What do you think about growing marijuana?" And I was just like, "Okay, you know, how many years of school do you have left?" He's got a, you know, I think at that time he had a year of school left, and I said, "Well, you know, this is this many years of school, and now you want to start growing marijuana?" I've never grown anything. He's never grown anything, period. And I thought, okay, you know, it'll wear off, and it is what it is. And literally a few days later, Cody came in and said, "Look, I got my medical marijuana card. Let's grow marijuana." And that's how it started. And I said, you know, he's going to do this. I want it to be done safest. I knew nothing about that part of the industry. Neither did he. And I said, I want this to be the safest. He, you know, I don't want him to have to feel like he's got to go underground by himself. That's the truth. And we sat down and talked about this a long time. This wasn't something, a decision that was made overnight. And I explained to him on the business end of how things worked. And we decided to go in as a partnership. We sold our motorcycles, 50-50, that's what it was. He put up 50% of the money and the time and the efforts. And to this day, that's how this is, literally to this day. And so, we formed a corporation, which I'm super familiar with. And, Nature's Leaf Incorporated was our first company, and actually the first store. And that's how it started. And there was no like, oh, you smoke. It was truly a business sense decision that was brought on by him. I'd like to take credit for it, but I guess I'll take credit for some of the other things.
Well, and operating, I mean, being 50-50 with your son is, again, incredible. I mean, there's not a lot of father-son teams in the industry. And being somebody that's also scaled from such a regional operation and such a large-scale operation with a family member like that is just awesome. And, I you know, but being from the 215 days to today, clearly there's been a lot of challenges. Proposition 64 at the best of times has been difficult dealing with the regulatory hurdles. As an operator who started in the California space, you know, what's the biggest hurdle that you've had to overcome, and how did you actually overcome it?
I think we're still in that phase, and that's banking. As of right now, it continues to be that phase of us and the hurdles, but it's gotten a lot easier. I think the biggest hurdle for us to overcome was kind of coming out of the closet on this and understanding and being able to talk to people in a way to understand that this is a business. It's not a couple of people sitting around a table getting high, selling bags of weed. And that hurdle for us in the beginning, where we would tell everybody we were consultants and we were, doing other things than what we were doing. And I think at one point we kind of both sat down and realized that, you know, listen, we're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars a quarter in taxes. And we're doing everything business as anybody else. Why should we not be proud of the direction that we're going with something like this? And, you know, that was a big one for us. And Cody with his, at that time, with his girlfriend and their family, and nobody really wanted to put out, because basically at that time, anybody doing this was just what anybody else would call a drug dealer. And, you know, so when we climbed out of that box and we were realizing that we were very viable as a company, and we were employing people, and we were doing things as legal as possible, that was a big hurdle that we were super proud to be able to get out of over.
Well, and you guys definitely got way, way past that point. But you're right. You know, 280E as well as banking issues are still plaguing the cannabis industry. I mean, are you, obviously we've seen kind of a shift in Congress and in the Senate's attitude towards cannabis. You know, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer having said that he wants to legalize cannabis. I personally don't think that he'll be able to do it. But are you hopeful that maybe we'll get some type of cannabis reform, like maybe the Safe Banking Act passed, you know, eventually, or some other type of legislation that will help ease banking burdens for the cannabis industry?
I mean, listen, it's going to go that direction. As of now, everything that's with cannabis is a matter of time. It's, you know, it's not if, it's when. And I think we've made huge leaps and bounds. I mean, we do have banking that's available and in a lot of ways now, that's being untouched. And, you know, after going through, and not exaggerating, going through 15 to 20 plus banks, you know, in this timeline, it's crazy. But I think we're making leaps and bounds. I mean, honestly, look at where we're at. You know, it's crazy to think that, you know, just the PV side of what we're doing is, you know, it'll be this year we're looking at 130, 150 million. It's insane. And that we are able to market and do what we're doing. And you know, yes, we are. 280 sucks. It's ridiculous, but that's part of the, I guess if you look at it, there's two ways we can look at it. And you can either get out of it because of it, or you can look at it as just another hurdle and we'll get through that side of it. And eventually we're going to be able to operate and use these write-offs as any other legitimate business as we are. But it's this thing that's hanging over us until we do get the reform that makes sense. Listen, go through the beginning of COVID and understand the fact that we've been deemed an essential business. That you know, if we're taking it year by year, that was enough for us for that year, because it really it set its trend and its mark for people that were not in the industry, people that did not believe in cannabis and what it's doing. And now there's so many more people realizing that it's essential and what it's doing for people because of kind of a weird scenario, but because of COVID.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. You know, when cannabis businesses were deemed, you know, essential as part of, you know, medical necessity. And not just that, but the workers also got priority placement list on vaccination schedules. So, you know, you're 100% right that, you know, the government did look at, or at least state by state, the government looked at cannabis businesses in a definite heightened sense. I think part of what helped that, though, is also, you know, the proliferation of alternative cannabinoids like CBD going mainstream, and that allowed politicians to kind of lighten their belts when it came to it. And I know that when I first talked to you, and I want to say it was 2018 or 2019, I believe that you had, part of our discussion was about alternative cannabinoids, because at that point CBD was the only player on the market, and you had talked about your belief in the whole of the alternative cannabinoid market, not just CBD. Now looking at 2021 versus say 2018 or 2019, and you're looking at proliferation of alternative cannabinoids throughout the market, both on the mainstream market and, you know, through the hemp derived cannabinoids, and then on the cannabis market through cannabis derived cannabinoids, you're looking at CBG, you're looking at THCV, you're looking at Delta 8, you're looking at Delta 10. I know that you had believed in the alternative cannabinoid market when we first talked. Did you see it exploding in the way that it has?
That's one thing that I can say. We are directly involved in that through the platinum vape, through the PV side of it. Never anticipated how much this was going to go off in the market and be actually received and well received for non-cannabis users And look at where we're at with this. I mean, we're talking every aspect of your life. It can now be touched with some sort of CBD in some way or another. People are using this on a daily basis. Now, I'm not saying that everything out there is good. We still got to work through that side of it. And but I think it's starting to mill itself out that CBD is it's viable in your daily life in some fashion, whether it's any type of tinctures or lotions or salves. It's in makeup now. You know, whether it's hemp or cannabis derived, it's a great product to be consuming, and it's safe.
Yeah. So, and it's
within reasons.
Right. Well, and like you said, you know, it's safe, but I think that the fact that it's in those, you know, like you said, it's in beauty creams, it's in all these different salves, tinctures, and lotions that are available to the mainstream public. Do you think that that's helped shifting political minds in maybe states where it's not legal? Like, say, for instance, you
absolutely.
Know, yeah. Like absolutely. I would, you know, I was visiting.
I'll tell you why, because the problem that we had in the beginning was that everybody associates CBD with cannabis, and it was in a negative way, and cannabis with CBD. But now there's so much education out there, and it is still associated. But what people are seeing is they're seeing so much CBD out there that even though just like I'm guilty of anybody as anybody else, when I'm driving down the road or when I'm in a store and I see CBD, instantly I think of cannabis. And that's a great thing now because people are purchasing this. I mean, we have a full CBD site. It's crazy. There's so much CBD going on in this world and, you know, and in the country. And there's still this image that people have in their mind of CBD being cannabis. And if I'm wrong, I guess I'm wrong, but I still see it. It might be just because I'm in the industry, but I talk to friends that are not cannabis users and they would never use CBD before. And now because it's marketed so well, in some cases, not so well, but most of the time now we're getting really good positive marketing. CBD, the association with cannabis is still there. And people that don't use cannabis are using CBD, but they're having this feeling that it is still cannabis.
Well, man, and some brands kind of help with that by putting, you know, a little leaf on it or something, you know, trying to be fun. But you know, you're right. I think that people are starting to see, like I was going to say, you know, when I went to Chicago, a couple of months ago and I drove through Chicago to get to, I drove through Indiana to get to Michigan. I stopped at a gas station and I saw CBD products at a gas station in Indiana. And I thought to myself, like, okay, Michigan, I get it. Illinois, I get it. Indiana is a very conservative state. You know, I'm pretty sure within the last 10 years, they just got rid of, you know, a no alcohol on Sunday rule. You know what I mean? And seeing CBD in a gas station being sold openly in Indiana, I was like, this is the beginning, you know, of a mindset shift. Do you see a federal legalization possible, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years? Like I said, I don't think it's going to happen possibly in this legislative session, but, you know, are you seeing it maybe in this administration is happening?
If you would have asked me that a few years ago, I would have said no, but I can tell you this, you know, from our perspective and just how rapid everything is moving and what's happening, I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if we don't see it, here in the next 3 to 5 years. It's getting to a point where the people that are involved in cannabis, whether they're using or not, are starting to find, the main reasons. And everybody is affected, unfortunately, by a family member that has cancer or has a terminal illness or has epilepsy, has, you know, any of these things that we could push on the fact that it is helping. And that is what is making this thing move as fast as it is, because people are recognizing this, maybe not as a recreational, but when they're sitting there with one of their family members or loved ones that is dealing with something that cannabis is helping them to either have, an appetite to during their treatments of whatever it is that they're going through. And we deal with this on a daily basis, but to see that they're gaining an appetite, or that it's curbing the pain, that they're not having to take the opiates, and that they're sleeping better at night. There's just nobody's saying, at least I don't say that cannabis cures cancer, not yet anyways. Wait till the studies come out and then they start to really find out what it truly does in the breakdown of the plant. But I think realistically, I can 100% tell you that it helps in the process of treatments and of curing cancer, if that's how you want to look at it, because that I can tell you, I witness it daily on the people that we help with these products. Does it cure them? No, I don't see that. Nobody knows that yet, but it definitely helps when somebody's in treatment with radiation or chemo, and they need something that helps them to create an appetite, to help them sleep at night in that process. I believe it's a huge part of that structure.
Well, and I think that we're starting to learn that as we start to learn what different cannabinoids actually do. And I think that a lot of research that's coming out from places like Israel, from places like Pennsylvania's medical market, where, you know, they're doing partnerships with different types of colleges and universities and medical centers. I think that we'll start to see an entourage effect research, cannabinoid research, and you'll start to see kind of micro and macro dose, you know, recommendations being given to people on what they should and shouldn't use. Cause, you know, like, you know, as you know, during the 215 days, it was kind of open-ended, you know, here's weed, try what you want, and then hopefully it will work for you. And nowadays it's more along the lines of, hey, you know, I know that sativa, high racy sativas with, like, you know, lots of limonene is gonna, you know, could give you an anxiety attack if you're prone to anxiety. They have certain types of understandings now that maybe they didn't have before. And I know only have you for a couple of more minutes, so I definitely want to ask you about, you know, your different offerings. And I've tried everything that you have as far as edibles. I've tried everything as far as you have as vaporizers. I haven't tried your flower line yet. When you're figuring out what types of product categories that you want to release, I understand kind of your thought process originally is, you know, putting out, products in the different types of top categories, but what finally made you want to leap into flower, and what can dispensaries expect from your flower line?
Well, once again, I mean, thank you for that. But as we were able to partner with a few really, really good, solid mainstream cultivators that were doing and I'm not saying anything bad about other cultivators, but the most important side for us was that we worked to a deal that allows us to keep that market open and fair on what we believe is having a really good product at a fair price that gives everybody the opportunity to have something really good instead of being in a different tax bracket to be able to afford certain brands of products. I mean, there's stuff out there, I'll be honest with you, it's mind-boggling on what they're getting for an eighth of flower that isn't, I mean, it's marketing geniuses is what I will say, because you can only grow something so good, and I get that, but the money that they're getting for an eighth of flower is mind-bending. But in the same sense, I feel like our flower, and everybody's going to say this, for the price and for the market where we're at and for the quality of this flower and where we believe that it should be for the consumer, I think we're right on point. And that's obviously, you know, for us, that's proven at the store level, because we're doing so good with our flower and with our pre-rolls. The same thing. We just want to have a very good, high quality product at affordable price for people to have that experience. And I can't stand the fact of people having to walk in, and even when we had our stores and having a top, mid, and bottom, I know that it's a necessity, but it's really tough for me to have people standing there that, you know, don't have the expendable amount of income to be able to go in and buy a $75, $90 eighth off of a shelf, but want that experience. And so that's, we got back into the flower side of that, because when we were cultivating, that was one of our big things, was keeping that price down, keeping it down to the consumer. So as we were cultivating, and we would push it to the stores when we were cultivators, we would make sure that the product was, that was hitting the shelf with that discount to the consumer, not just adding a, you know, another layer of money to the pockets of the owners of the stores. And so that's why we did really well at cultivating. Were we the best at it? No. Were we the worst at it? No. But we did provide a very good, safe at that time. We were always testing our products before testing was really even a thing, just so that we always wanted to know that we were putting something out that was safe, for people to consume. And, that's shown through. And then we got out of cultivation, through the rat race of stores, and manufacturing. And, you know, now we're definitely happy to be back into it. We've got a huge cultivation in Oklahoma. We're starting another one here in California and Michigan as well. So that's our flower.
And now you've now expanded into flower. You've got a pretty wide berth as far as your product category offerings. The one mainstay that I don't think you've jumped into yet is concentrates outside of the vaporizer line. Are you eventually going to get into dabbable concentrates, or are you focusing now on the categories that you currently have?
Well, we are, there's, let's see, how can I say this? So we have another brand that, that we have, you know, that we've started some time back, and that's Vistal. And so Vistal is a product that's manufactured, in our facility, and that's all the extracts. So we do diamonds and sugars and everything dabbable is our line called Vistal.
Gotcha. And are you going to release one maybe under the PV line, or are you going to keep those two as separate companies?
And we found as of right now, and once again, I mean, we're just kind of reaching through this. Vistal has grown immensely. So it kind of is, you know, it is under the PV line. And you know, you'll see if you're going to be at Hall of Flowers, we have a full Vistal setup at the Hall of Flowers as well. But it is manufactured by us. It is our brand. It's under the PV umbrella, if you want to call it that, along with you know, with Driven and Bong Buddies and the React Foundation and whatnot. What we found is that, in all honesty, the shelving side of it was kind of strange. The stores are more accepting of having and putting more of these product lines on their shelves if they're not a continuous flow of one brand. I know it sounds strange, and I believe that to not be true until we found out that it is true. And so I believe that's probably why Driven now has broken in the top 20 in cartridges, and you know, which is a sub brand of PV. Vistal is climbing the ranks as well. Bong Buddies, which is a pre-roll company, is absolutely crazy. It's crazy. We can't even keep up with it. Would that be the same? Well, we do have PV pre-rolls, which are doing really well, but not on the scale that Bong Buddies is. And I, you know, the only thing that we have to kind of figure is between the characters and then also the fact that stores like to have a variety of each SKU under different names seems to be working, I guess.
Well, I mean, it definitely definitely makes sense. I mean, unless you're a, say, a flagship store, but even if you're a flagship store, like a, say, a Stizzy location or something like that, I mean, even they have different brands in their store. So yeah, you definitely don't want all of a singular brand. That makes sense to me. I got to ask, you know, what's next for you guys? You know, last year you guys got acquired by Red, White, and Bloom. You know, you guys are now putting out the Stash line. What's coming up down the pipeline for you guys?
I mean, we've gone through some apparel, which is doing really well on our House of Platinum site, where you can purchase the apparel that we've come up with. You know, we're wanting to grow the brand. I mean, we're still on board and we're in this process with RWB and we're really fortunate to have, I don't want to say the word control, but we do have control of the brand and the creations that we are in there. And I think this next year for us is really focusing on the states that we're planning to expand into. I know Florida is probably the next market, and we're talking a lot about Florida. And so I think we've been really expanding a lot in different product SKUs, which we will continue to do. Nothing super major, but I think more so just going towards saturation for us is getting market saturation.
Well, you're definitely getting there. I remember when I did get finally to Michigan to put that earlier cap when I drove through from Chicago, the first thing I noticed at the first dispensary I stopped was seeing Platinum on the shelf, and that really made me happy. Glad to see you guys out there in the Midwest, man. Been talking with George Sadler again, co-founder and CEO over at Platinum. Really appreciate what you guys got going on for the industry, brother, and look forward to seeing you soon in person.
Absolutely, man. Thank you. I always love getting on with you here.
We would like to thank George for his time and being on today's episode. Find out more about Platinum by visiting them online at www.houseofplatinum.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.